Good afternoon. I am pleased to introduce Altria. It's the only U.S. tobacco company presenting this year at the conference. We're especially pleased to introduce Marty Barrington as Chairman and CEO. It's his first presentation in that role here at CAGNY. Joining him on stage are Dave Baran, the President and COO, and Howard Willard, Executive Vice President and CFO. We'd like to thank Altria for sponsoring the break this morning, so thank you very much for that. Altria is coming off a strong fourth quarter in 2012 performance. We look forward to the company providing an outlook on its business, both in 2013 and beyond, as well as its strong free cash flow, which helps support its over 5% dividend yield. Marty, let me turn it over to you.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for today's presentation. Before we begin, please review the safe harbor statement in today's presentation and the forward-looking and cautionary statement section in today's press release for a description of the various factors that could cause our actual results to differ materially from projections included in today's remarks. Reconciliations and further explanations of the non-GAAP financial measures discussed today are available on altria.com. Joining me in presenting today are Dave Baran, Altria's President and Chief Operating Officer, and Howard Willard, Altria's Chief Financial Officer. Also with us is Murray Garnick, Senior Vice President and Associate General Counsel, responsible for litigation at Altria Client Services, who will join us in our breakout room for questions. Today, we'll focus on the strengths of Altria's diverse business model and our plan to continue creating value for shareholders in 2013 and beyond. Altria and its companies focus on four core strategies to create long-term value for shareholders. Invest in our tobacco company's strong premium brands. Manage our cost structures. Maintain a strong balance sheet. Return cash to shareholders, primarily through dividends. This afternoon, Dave, Howard, and I will review these strategies with you and share the significant progress we have made with each in recent years. Dave will discuss our strategy to invest in premium brands. Howard will update you on our cost management strategy, balance sheet, and cash returns to shareholders. I will then return to discuss certain aspects of the external environment before concluding our presentation. Let's begin with an overview of the tobacco business environment. The total tobacco space remains an attractive place to do business with a growing profit pool, a large base of adult tobacco consumers, total tobacco volume that has declined at a moderate rate, and opportunities for further growth through innovation. The estimated U.S. total tobacco profit pool has grown from $11.1 billion in 2007 to $13.8 billion in 2012, a compounded annual rate of 4.5%. Altria's estimated share of these profits increased from 44% in 2007 to 52% in 2012 as the company added to its already strong cigarette presence by acquiring leading positions in smokeless tobacco and machine-made large cigars. There are approximately 56 million adult tobacco consumers in the United States, according to government data. This number has dropped modestly in recent years as declines in adult tobacco use have been partially offset by population growth. The types of products used by adult tobacco consumers have continued to evolve as a significant number of adults have switched from cigarettes to smokeless alternatives or use multiple forms of tobacco products. These preferences are reflected in total tobacco volume trends. From 2009 through 2012, total tobacco volumes based on pounds declined approximately 1.5% annually. Our tobacco companies estimate that during this same time period, the cigarette category's volume declined approximately 3% to 4% per year. The machine-made large cigar category's volume grew approximately 2% per year, and the smokeless products category volume grew approximately 5% to 6% per year. PM USA estimates that the cigarette category's volume declined approximately 3% in 2012, the lowest rate of decline since 2006. USSTC estimates that the smokeless tobacco category's volume increased approximately 5%, relatively consistent with long-term trends. With respect to machine-made large cigars, Middleton believes that the category grew in 2012, though category volume is difficult to estimate in the short term. Altria's companies are well-positioned in the largest and most profitable tobacco categories in the United States, with a focus on four strong premium brands: Marlboro, Black & Mild, Copenhagen, and Skoal. In 2012, these brands helped our companies achieve the highest retail market share in the cigarette, smokeless tobacco, and machine-made large cigar categories. PM USA's retail share was 49.8%, led by Marlboro's 42.6% retail share. Marlboro's share was larger than the next 10 brands combined. USSTC's and PM USA's combined retail share of the smokeless products category was 55.4%. Copenhagen and Skoal, the leading premium MST brands, had a combined retail share of 50.6%. Middleton's retail share was 30.2%. Black & Mild's retail share of 30% led the machine-made large cigar category. These brands help drive our operating company's income growth, and in a moment, Dave will highlight our progress with these brands in 2012 and the steps we are taking to position them for continued success. Our tobacco company's leading presence across tobacco categories uniquely positions them to understand and meet the evolving preferences of adult tobacco consumers. Tens of millions of adult tobacco consumers interact with our tobacco company's brands every year. Our companies have a deep understanding of these consumers and work to develop products that meet their preferences. In recent years, Altria's tobacco companies have introduced cigarettes, cigars, and smokeless tobacco products that have expanded their product portfolios, strengthened their brands, and contributed to retail share gains. Products introduced by Altria's tobacco companies in the last 3 years have outperformed those of their leading competitors in cigarettes, cigars, and smokeless tobacco in terms of retail market share. Adult tobacco consumers continue to express interest in tobacco alternatives. We are closely monitoring adult tobacco consumer interest in alternative tobacco products, and our companies are working internally and through partnerships to develop innovative new products for them. Some of our new products are available in lead markets where we are learning while making disciplined financial investments. In the context of this attractive business environment, we believe Altria's tobacco companies are well positioned to maximize income in today's largest tobacco categories and to innovate to support future growth. Dave will now discuss our strategy to invest in premium brands.
Thanks, Marty. The four premium brands of our tobacco operating companies, Marlboro, Black & Mild, Copenhagen, and Skoal, have strong equity and opportunities for future growth. These brands have enjoyed success for decades because they have evolved to meet the changing preferences of adult tobacco consumers, and each has exciting plans going forward to do so. In the smokable product segment, PM USA and John Middleton's strategy is to maximize income while maintaining modest share momentum over time on Marlboro and Black & Mild. Marlboro is the truly iconic cigarette brand positioned as a cigarette that men smoke for flavor. Marlboro has expanded its reach over time to meet evolving preferences of adult smokers while consistently maintaining its core positioning. Its brand building initiatives have produced superior brand equity and over five decades of retail share growth. In 2012, PM USA introduced a new brand architecture that focuses on Marlboro's four product families: red, gold, green, and black. The architecture allows PM USA to express Marlboro's essence and positioning in new ways enabling the brand to expand its reach and breadth among adult competitive smokers. PM USA is communicating the architecture with initiatives across Marlboro's value equation. These initiatives reinforce Marlboro's core positioning while allowing each product family to tailor its message to specific adult smoker segments. PM USA evolved Marlboro's retail look and website to communicate the new architecture and highlight the four product families. You can see PM USA's new retail look, which distinctly merchandises each of Marlboro families in more than 130,000 stores across the country. The brand used its online platform to engage smokers 21 and older in a variety of other activities that support rich brand interactions and repeat engagement. PM USA also communicated the architecture with other brand-building activities, including sweepstakes, one-to-one programs, direct mail, and email, all limited to smokers 21 and older. All these activities were designed to bring the four product families to life in the minds of adult smokers. Let me give you some examples. The Marlboro Red family represents the brand's original and classic values of independence, hard work, and freedom. Last year, Marlboro Red designed its equity campaign using classic Marlboro imagery and a straightforward, authentic tone. Marlboro Red invited adult smokers to forge their own personal brand with its Stand For Your Brand promotion on Marlboro.com. Also in 2012, the Marlboro Red family introduced Marlboro 83s, offering classic Marlboro flavor in an updated modern package. The Marlboro Gold family expresses the brand's values in a sophisticated and innovative manner. Marlboro Gold uses the tagline, "Flavor is golden," and supported the family with a range of initiatives last year. For example, some of the packings in the Marlboro Gold family were enhanced with a new premium feel. In addition, last month, PM USA expanded distribution of Marlboro Southern Cut nationally. Marlboro Southern Cut has a uniquely rich and smooth flavor and comes in a sophisticated package with embossing and other premium cues. Also, Team Marlboro's online promotion invites adult smokers to volunteer to help preserve the land through restoration and preservation projects. Marlboro Green reflects the brand's value in a social and extroverted way. The Marlboro Green family used Marlboro's nightlife, ranch, and website infrastructure to engage its adult smokers with a range of activities throughout 2012, including trips to the Marlboro Ranch with the Chill Off the Grid sweepstakes and the Biggest Night of the Year sweepstakes that awarded exclusive trips to Las Vegas. Earlier this year, Marlboro Green introduced an online content-based promotion called Flavor Makers. This engages adult smokers interactively on topics including music, food, and interesting locations around the country. Marlboro Black is a bold, modern take on Marlboro's values. The Marlboro Black family highlights its bold flavor through various equity-building initiatives that invite adult smokers to be part of the Marlboro Black story. In recent months, Marlboro Black engaged adult smokers through its Capture the Unknown sweepstakes. Participants actively engaged with the brand by submitting more than 80,000 photos that told their own stories of bold adventure. At the end of the third quarter of 2012, PM USA expanded the distribution of Marlboro NXT part of the Marlboro Black family, into 27 states. Marlboro NXT contains capsule technology in the filter that allows adult smokers to switch from non-menthol to menthol taste. PM USA is very pleased with Marlboro Black's initial performance and will continue to focus on building its equity. In 2012, Marlboro's communications on pack, online, through the mail, and at retail introduced its new architecture through millions of touch points with adult smokers. These initiatives helped contribute to Marlboro's strong retail share performance in 2012 as the brand's full-year retail share increased 0.6 percentage point. Each of Marlboro's product families has exciting activities planned for 2013 to build on last year's progress and enhance the brand strength. This week, Marlboro introduced its wide open flavor promotion that further informs adult smokers about the brand's architecture and highlights the distinct characteristics of its four product families. We are just getting started, and while we are very pleased with the progress in 2012, we expect our investments in Marlboro's new architecture to deliver benefits well into the future. In cigars, Black & Mild is positioned as the best any-day cigar adults enjoy for its smooth taste and pleasant aroma. Black & Mild's historic strength has been in the tip cigarillo segment, where its products represented approximately 84% of the segment's retail share in 2012. In recent years, the brand has both expanded its plastic tip cigar portfolio and launched wood tip cigars in varieties that include wine and royale. The brand has also met adult cigar smokers' interest with seasonal offerings, such as Black & Mild Dark Blend and Summer Blend. Additionally, Black & Mild has expanded the brand with untipped cigarillo varieties. Black & Mild Classic, Sweets, and Wine provide the foundation for the brand's inroads in this growing segment. In the third quarter of 2012, Middleton introduced a new untipped cigarillo, Black & Mild Jazz, into select geographies. These initiatives help Black & Mild grow its total share of the machine-made large cigar category in 2012. In 2013, Middleton plans to build Black & Mild's equity with initiatives that include online promotions and new products. This week, for example, Middleton will begin shipping Black & Mild Jazz in plastic and wood tip versions nationwide. Marlboro and Black & Mild's brand building activities have helped these brands lead their respective categories in retail share while contributing to solid income growth. From 2008 through 2012, Marlboro's retail share increased from 41.9% to 42.6%, an average increase of approximately 0.2 share point a year. From 2009, the first full year for which comparable data is available, through 2012, Black & Mild held its retail share flat in an intensely competitive environment. And from 2008 through 2012, the smokable product segment grew its adjusted operating company's income at a compounded annual rate of 4.7%, including a 4.2% increase in 2012. In the smokable product segment, PM USA and Middleton's results compare favorably to those of their leading public company competitors on a number of metrics. From 2008 through 2012, net revenues per thousand increased at a compounded annual rate of 5.5%. Adjusted operating companies' income margins grew 7.4 percentage points, and Altria's smokable product segment had the highest margin in 2012. In the smokeless product segment, USSTC and PM USA seek to increase income by growing volume at or ahead of the category growth rate while maintaining modest share momentum on Copenhagen and Skoal combined. Copenhagen is the original moist smokeless tobacco brand that has provided adult dippers satisfaction since 1822. The brand's equity is built around its core values of masculinity, adventure, heritage, authenticity, and tradition. Copenhagen's historic strength has been in the natural segment, where it has maintained its leadership position. In recent years, USSTC has enhanced Copenhagen's product portfolio by introducing Copenhagen Long Cut Wintergreen, Long Cut Straight, and Extra Long Cut Natural. In May of last year, USSTC expanded Copenhagen Southern Blend into new geographies, offering adult dippers a mellow taste in a manageable long cut form. These products helped drive Copenhagen's excellent retail share performance over the past few years. USSTC continues to enhance Copenhagen's product portfolio as it expands Copenhagen's Southern Blend into additional states this week. USSTC's other premium brand, Skoal, is a contemporary smokeless brand that provides a smooth smokeless tobacco experience. Its products, which offer great taste in forms that are easy to manage, represented over 22% of the smokeless category in 2012. Skoal also has the leading position in the growing mint and pouch segments. Skoal continues to evolve its product portfolio to meet the preferences of adult dippers. In 2011, USSTC introduced Skoal Extra, offering adult dippers MST with a big, smooth taste. Skoal Extra has gained retail share since its introduction, and USSTC plans to build on its initial success. In late November, USSTC expanded Skoal Ready Cut into 20 new states, offering adult dippers an innovative moist smokeless tobacco form. These preformed portions provide great taste and are easier to control than conventional smokeless tobacco products. Skoal Ready Cut is available in mint, wintergreen, and straight at a premium price. Skoal's equity campaign is built to reinforce the brand's core product attribute with its tagline, "It's smooth, it's Skoal." Skoal is bringing this campaign to life with equity-building communications across multiple channels, including online, mobile, direct mail, and in adult-only facilities, all limited to tobacco consumers 21 and older. Starting this month, Skoal is rolling out new packaging to better reflect the brand's contemporary premium qualities and to differentiate its product offerings. Skoal will also continue to utilize side label communications to further reinforce its equity and relevancy with adult tobacco consumers. From 2009 through 2012, the smokeless product segment delivered excellent results by focusing on Copenhagen and Skoal. Copenhagen and Skoal grew their combined volume at a compounded annual rate of 7.6%. Copenhagen and Skoal increased their combined retail share from 47.5% to 50.6%, an average annual increase of 1 percentage point, and USSTC and PMUSA grew their adjusted operating company's income in smokeless products at a compounded annual rate of 14.9%. Turning to the wine segment, Ste. Michelle has complemented our tobacco operating company's performance with strong income growth. Ste. Michelle's goal is to grow income by expanding the share and distribution of its premium wines. Its estates include Chateau Ste. Michelle, Columbia Crest, 14 Hands, and Stag's Leap Wine Cellars. Also, Ste. Michelle is the exclusive distributor and marketer of Antinori, Champagne Nicolas Pouillat, and Villa Maria Estate products in the U.S. Ste. Michelle's wine and wineries have consistently earned recognition and critical acclaim. Wines produced by its vineyards earned 187 90-plus ratings from wine magazines in 2012. Chateau Ste. Michelle was recognized as one of Wine and Spirits magazine's Wineries of the Year for the 18th time, making it the most honored American winery and the second most honored winery overall over the last quarter century. Ste. Michelle's strategies enabled it to grow its adjusted operating company's income at a compounded annual rate of 12.5% from 2009 to 2012. In summary, our operating company's investments in their premium brands delivered strong results in 2012. We believe these investments, together with plans for 2013, position our operating companies well for the future. I will now turn the presentation over to Howard, who will discuss our remaining strategies. Howard?
Thank you, Dave. Altria's second strategy is to manage its cost structures. Altria's focus on reducing costs has contributed to adjusted operating companies' income growth and investments in our company's premium brands in recent years. As you may recall, Altria completed a multi-year $1.5 billion cost reduction program in late 2011. After completing that program, we launched a cost reduction initiative to achieve an additional $400 million in annualized cost savings versus previously planned spending by the end of 2013. Altria's companies made significant progress in 2012 on this cost reduction program by reducing headcount, consolidating certain facilities, improving business processes, and pursuing other savings. Our current program is primarily focused on reducing cigarette-related infrastructure, but includes efforts across all of our businesses. Effective cost management and business process improvement have become an important part of our culture, and we expect these efforts to continue to contribute to future results. Our tobacco operating companies consist of brand management and manufacturing. Our two service companies, Altria Group Distribution Company and Altria Client Services, provide centralized services to our companies in a cost-effective manner. This structure allows us to provide services efficiently across tobacco categories as adult tobacco consumer preferences evolve. Altria's third strategy is to maintain a strong balance sheet. This helps to secure the cash flow generated by its operating companies, protect Altria's investment-grade credit rating, and support Altria's ability to return cash to shareholders, primarily in the form of dividends. Altria's economic interest in SABMiller allows us to participate in the estimated $31.5 billion global beer profit pool, where SABMiller has an estimated 20% share. The SABMiller stake also contributes to income diversification as well as earnings per share and dividend growth. The value of Altria's interest has increased nicely from $3.4 billion in July of 2002 to nearly $20 billion as of December 2012. This asset has a low tax basis of under $500 million, however, and any sale would be taxed at our corporate tax rate of approximately 35%. We regularly evaluate our interest in SABMiller, and currently, we believe maintaining the investment is in the best interests of our shareholders. Altria took a number of steps in the last year to help maintain its balance sheet strength. In the third quarter of 2012, Altria completed a tender offer and repurchased high coupon debt that it replaced with new lower cost debt. These actions reduced our 2018 and 2019 debt maturity towers, lowered future interest expense, and reduced our weighted average coupon rate. Our weighted average coupon rate has decreased from 9.1% at the end of 2009 to 7.2% as of December 31, 2012. From now through the end of the first quarter of 2014, Altria will have approximately $2 billion in high coupon debt coming due, with associated annual interest payments of approximately $160 million. Our decision to refinance or retire this debt as it comes due depends on the conditions in the capital markets, interest rates, Altria's business needs, and other factors. In January of this year, Altria made a voluntary $350 million contribution to its pension plans to strengthen their funding position. The contribution increased Altria's plan's funding to approximately 82% on a projected benefit obligation basis. We currently project our future internal uses of cash to be relatively modest. We anticipate capital expenditures across the Altria family of companies to be less than 2% of revenues net of excise taxes over the next few several years. For this year, we anticipate capital expenditures will be in the range of $125 to $150 million. Altria's final strategy is to return cash to shareholders, primarily through dividends. In 2012, our payout ratio of approximately 80% of adjusted diluted EPS was the highest in the S&P's food, beverage, and tobacco index. Altria has a long history of dividend payments and dividend increases, having increased its dividend 46 times in the last 44 years. Since the spinoff of Philip Morris International in early 2008, Altria has paid shareholders $14.4 billion in dividends and increased its dividend six times for a compounded annual growth rate of 8.7%. In August of 2012, Altria increased its dividend by 7.3% to an annualized rate of $1.76 per share. While all dividend payments are subject to the discretion of Altria's board of directors, the company aims to increase its dividend in line with adjusted diluted EPS growth. While Altria returns cash to shareholders primarily through dividends, we have also done so through stock repurchases, when we have concluded that this is the optimal use of cash to maximize shareholder value. Since the spinoff, through January 31, 2013, Altria has returned approximately $3.6 billion in cash through share repurchases, and together with dividends, $18 billion in total cash. In 2012, Altria repurchased shares worth $1.1 billion. As of January 31st, the company had $57 million remaining under its current $1.5 billion program that it expects to complete by the end of the second quarter. The timing of share repurchases depends upon marketplace conditions and other factors, and the program remains subject to the discretion of Altria's board. I will now turn things back to Marty.
Thanks, Howard. Well, as you've seen, Altria has made demonstrable progress in effectively executing its core strategies over the last several years. We remain focused on these same strategies to create future shareholder value. We execute these strategies in an external environment that has posed challenges for many years. The success our tobacco companies have had in managing these challenges has been an important contributor to business performance. While an evolving regulatory environment, tobacco excise taxes and litigation continue to present risks, our companies have highly developed capabilities to deal with them and will continue to advocate on behalf of our shareholders. I'll provide a brief overview of each of these areas. With respect to FDA regulation, PM USA and USSTC are focused on complying with the law and constructively engaging with the agency and other stakeholders on issues related to the law. I'll discuss a few of these topics with a focus on where we expect activity this year. The first is substantial equivalence reports. FDA has been reviewing reports for products that were modified or introduced in the market within the statutory time period. We have been interacting actively with FDA on this, and while only the agency can determine its schedule, we would expect FDA to continue to make progress on this issue in 2013. FDA regulation of tobacco products may be seen as an opportunity as it relates to product innovation, notwithstanding the challenges it presents. The law's express recognition of the potential role that modified risk tobacco products may play in reducing the harm caused by tobacco use has created new opportunities for engagement focused on scientific, technological, and policy issues. We have engaged with FDA extensively on this important topic, encouraging it to develop scientific standards for evaluating potentially less hazardous products that are rigorous yet feasible. In April, FDA is required to submit a report to Congress on innovative products, including modified risk tobacco products. The second relates to tobacco constituents. Our companies completed their first submission of harmful and potentially harmful constituents in compliance with FDA's draft guidance on constituent testing and reporting. By April of this year, FDA is expected to issue regulations that will determine the timing for future reporting of these constituents and to make public the harmful and potentially harmful constituent information. There are other matters where FDA may take action this year. FDA has released its agenda for 2013, indicating that it plans to propose to regulate products such as cigars, e-cigarettes, and other tobacco products. FDA has also requested comments and scientific information to inform potential changes to smokeless tobacco warning labels. In addition, FDA may also issue its report on menthol cigarettes in 2013. We are closely monitoring FDA-related developments, and our companies will continue to engage FDA constructively on issues that are important to our business. Turning to taxes. Tobacco excise tax increases continue to pose challenges, though recent increases have been limited in size and number. For example, the full-year weighted average state cigarette excise tax increased at a compounded annual rate of about 10% between 2004 and 2010. In the last 2 years, these increases have been more modest, increasing at a compounded annual rate of 3% over the two-year period as state legislatures and voters have resisted proposals to impose additional taxes on smokers. Notably, in June 2012, California voters defeated a ballot initiative that would have increased the state's cigarette excise tax by $1 per pack. However, tobacco products will remain a target for excise tax increases, so our tobacco companies will continue to work with their trade partners, adult consumers, and other interested parties to advocate against excessive tax increases. In 2012, we continued to achieve substantial success in managing litigation, though significant challenges remain. A comprehensive discussion of tobacco-related litigation may be found in the financial statements of the 8K we filed on January 31. I'll touch briefly on two categories of tobacco litigation, lights class actions and the Engle progeny cases. With respect to the lights class action litigation, only three statewide lights class actions remain certified, pending in California, Missouri, and Massachusetts. In California, the Brown trial is scheduled to begin in April of this year. The Larson case in Missouri is scheduled to be retried in January 2014, and the Aspinall case in Massachusetts is active but does not have a trial date. Although outcomes of these cases remain uncertain, We believe we have substantial defenses in all of these cases. In federal court, no Lights case is currently certified as a class action, and no class certification in federal court has ever withstood appeal. Regarding the Engle progeny cases, in 2012, PMUSA continued to demonstrate that it has strong factual and legal defenses to these suits. The issue of whether plaintiffs' theories in these suits violate Florida law and due process is currently before the Florida Supreme Court and the 11th Circuit Federal Appeals Court. In the meantime, we've received defense verdicts in approximately half of the cases tried to verdict in federal and state court. In 2012, the appellate courts also reversed several prior punitive damage judgments on a variety of state law grounds. PMUSA will continue to defend these cases vigorously and appeal any loss, though it's possible that we will have to pay some additional judgments before the due process issue is resolved by the Florida Supreme Court or the United States Supreme Court. We have had significant success in managing litigation, although we continue to face challenges as we have for many years. Our goal remains to protect the interests of our shareholders by vigorously defending these claims. Altria and its companies are also focused on continuously improving our culture of compliance and responsibility. We are pleased that our efforts in these areas were recognized by several organizations in 2012. For example, Fortune magazine, in its most admired companies survey, ranked Altria number 4 overall and number 1 in the tobacco industry in social responsibility. Altria is now a member of the Dow Jones Sustainability North American Index. And Corporate Responsibility magazine ranked Altria 15th on its list of top 100 corporate citizens, up from 35th in 2011. Altria's diverse business model, execution of its core strategies, and success in addressing external challenges has supported the consistent delivery of solid annual adjusted EPS growth and excellent total returns to its shareholders since the spinoff of Philip Morris International. From 2007 through 2012, Altria grew its adjusted diluted EPS at a compounded annual rate of 7.9%. This is consistent with Altria's goal to grow adjusted diluted EPS at an average annual rate of 7% to 9% over time. Our consistent adjusted EPS growth and strong and growing dividend supported total shareholder returns that exceeded the broader market and that of similar companies. The company's total shareholder return from the end of 2007 to the end of 2012 was 84.2%, outperforming the S&P 500's total return for the same period of 8.6% and the S&P Food, Beverage, and Tobacco Index's return of 54.1%. As we look to 2013, we are confident in our businesses and their plans for the year. We do remain cautious, however, about the business environment. Adult consumers remain under economic pressure as they deal with the end of the payroll tax holiday, as well as continuing high unemployment. We are also mindful of the continued risk of state tobacco excise tax increases. We reaffirm that Altria expects its 2013 full-year adjusted diluted EPS, which excludes special items, will be in the range of $2.35 to $2.41. This represents a growth rate of 6% to 9% from an adjusted diluted EPS base of $2.21 in 2012. We believe that this adjusted diluted EPS forecast, coupled with our strong dividend that currently yields over 5%, continues to offer investors a compelling shareholder return. In sum, Altria will continue to use the strengths of our diverse business model and the strategies we discussed today with the goal of creating value for our shareholders into the future. Our tobacco companies invest in strong premium brands that can support future income growth. our alcohol assets complement our tobacco company's operating performance. All our companies carefully manage costs, and Altria maintains a strong balance sheet that supports its ability to return significant amounts of cash to shareholders. Finally, we have talented and dedicated employees who develop and execute our strategies and are at the heart of Altria's success. Thank you for your interest in Altria. We're now happy to take your questions. Yes, sir, we have a question here.
I know there's some formalities or hurdles for it getting finally approved, but assuming it does, the NPM MSA adjustment will give you a nice boost to your cash available for this year. Just strategically speaking, what would your priorities be for using that?
Thanks for your question. Just to ground everybody, we're talking about the Master Settlement Agreement NPM adjustment. And just for context, of course, it's not final. There's a settlement that's before the arbitration panel. There are some objections from non-settling states. So I think it's important to point out, to begin with, that it hasn't been approved finally. We've put out a release on this about our intention, about what we'll do with that. Howard, you may want to pick up on the financials.
Sure. I mean, I think the amount of the settlement is estimated right now at about $450 million on a pre-tax basis. And we'd have a number of things we could do with that. We haven't specifically earmarked that for any activity. And we have, at this point, not included it in our underlying guidance. So that would be something we'd decide once that was finalized.
Thanks for your question. Judy?
What do you think drove the more modest decline in cigarette consumption in 2012? And secondly, you talked about looking at a lot of the consumer data and their behavior about the alternative tobacco products. So what is that really telling you and sort of your capabilities and your strategies in participating in the alternative tobacco products?
Okay, thanks. Let me take the second part of that first, if I may. We've described previously in presentations, you've heard us talk about this on the earnings call some, about developing our innovation capability. I think, you know, part of what we tried to do in the presentation today, and I think Dave's presentation did an excellent job of it, is showing the innovation that is occurring at the companies, right? You see it in packaging, you see it in products, you see it in marketing, you see it in mobile. The way we're thinking about it is innovation is really broader than simply product development. The company has aspirations to be as innovative as that can be across its business processes, across going to market and the like. And that's, I think, how really innovative companies outperform in the marketplace. That is, they innovate in all of their domains. Now, with respect to product development, we've spoken before, I think, there is no question that there are a group of adult tobacco consumers, particularly adult smokers, who are open to alternative products. They enjoy the tobacco experience very much, but there are unmet needs. We have been focused on that, as you know, for some period of time. I'll just mention, one or two things. We mentioned we have products in test market. So we have, for example, tobacco sticks. I think we've shown in previous presentations our Verve, which is really a very unique way of enjoying tobacco and tobacco flavor in a non-combustible format. We're very focused on it. It begins with consumer insight. It begins with understanding the adult tobacco consumer. And we, with all respect, we believe that we know a lot about this consumer, and we're very focused on that. Volume, yeah. Well, the secular decline rate, I would say, has been pretty stable for some period of time. We don't have a hard number on that, but we would estimate, somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 3%, obviously, over some period of time. Volume goes down in the cigarette business every year. It has since the middle of the 80s. One reason may be the excise taxes. We pointed out in the chart, obviously, we had some deceleration in the rate of excise taxes. There's no question that when excise taxes go up, it can have an accelerating effect. You saw that with the FET increase in 2009. So probably a combination of things. So we'll see. David, and then I'll come back here. Chris.
Marty, the comment and caution you made about the consumer environment, high levels of unemployment, the increase in the payroll tax coming into this year. Now that we're sort of 2 months into the year. Is there any evidence of change in U.S. adult smoker and smokeless tobacco consumer behavior?
No, we haven't seen much evidence of that yet. You know, it's the beginning of the year, so we're trying to be prudent. You know, when you look at the macroeconomic environment, it has so many mixed signals, doesn't it? You see housing starts start to pick up a little bit, which is a good sign, and then you get a, you know, kind of a dismal forecast on GDP from some economists, and then people are having a hard time, I think, predicting the ultimate effect of the payroll tax. You know, the unemployment rate remains, unfortunately, durably high, and the adult tobacco consumers, as we know, over-index in terms of how that hits them. So to answer your question directly, we haven't seen it yet, but we're trying to be careful at the beginning of the year. Chris, you, I think I skipped over you.
Thank you. I want to ask you about your engagement with the FDA and the degree to which maybe that's increased. I know there's a number of different areas where that engagement could occur, substantial equivalence to menthol, that kind of thing. Just be curious in your thoughts there. And then in relation to modified risk products, which you talked about before, I'm just curious if you think the FDA is at a point where they have the scientific, or they're able to put some scientific standards forward to help move that quicker, more quickly.
Okay. Thanks for your question. You know, I would refer people, if you're interested in how we're engaging with the FDA, I would refer you to altria.com and go to our regulatory affairs section. We try to put most, at least, of our written engagement materials up there, and they're, again, with appropriate humility, I think they're pretty robust. I mean, we really have set out from the beginning to try to have a constructive relationship with the agency. It's very difficult, I think, to run a business when you don't understand your regulator and they don't understand you. It can be very distracting. So we don't agree with them on everything. But remember, the statute's relatively new, right, and it's untested. And who knows more about the tobacco space than those of us who have been in it for some time? We're trying to share our perspective with the agency so that at least they're informed as they think about the regulations that they're drafting. And I think that's a good idea. On substantial equivalence, we are talking to them regularly. I think the other manufacturers have made reference to this. We talk to them regularly about our applications. They are doing follow-up questions and the like. And then I would say beyond sort of the technical matters that we work with them on, we're trying to be a constructive player in the policy debate. So take modified risk tobacco, which we'll come to in a moment. It's an extremely important topic, and they deserve the benefit of, I think, the leading manufacturer in the space about how we think about that, and we're trying to engage with them on that. We have many submissions that are on our website that I won't take the time to go over here, but I'd refer you to them. Yes, I think that the FDA will issue standards for modified risk tobacco products because the statute requires that they do so. And we have engaged at several open hearings with them on that. We have put several submissions in, and probably most telling, they have to report to the Congress about what they've done on it. And as you know, that's kind of how it works in executive agency land. They have to go up to the Hill, and they have to explain what they're working on, and I'm confident that the FDA will do that. Vivian.
Thank you. I have two questions. First, on the SET, it's only been a couple weeks since you guys reported earnings, but we've now seen another half dozen states or so implement increases. So I'm curious if your view since you reported at the end of January has changed at all in terms of kind of the magnitude of the increase you're expecting for the full year. My second question is kind of more theoretical in terms of the industry volume declines we've seen over the last decade. We've seen, you know, significant changes in terms of public place smoking regulation. I'm curious, you know, what impact you think you've seen in terms of volumes over the last decade and your outlook for the incremental impact on volume declines going forward.
Okay, thanks for those. I'll take the first one, and Dave, maybe I'll ask you to comment on the second. We have not changed our view on SETs since we spoke about it last. What I would remind everybody is 'tis the season of the state houses, right? They sort of get cranked up in January. That continues for varying durations, but most of the activity is in the period, let's call it January through June or July. So it's still pretty early. We've seen, I think, at least six states put in proposed increases. It's important to point out that proposed increases don't mean past increases. And we engage, as you probably know, heavily in trying to make the case that smokers in particular are already very heavily taxed. They more than carry their own weight. We've got pretty good advocacy on that, so we'll see. But we haven't seen really a change since we spoke about that last. Dave, you want to comment on the volume?
I comment on the volume in this way. Instead of just looking at the total cigarette volume, I would step back and look at the total tobacco volume in the U.S. Because what has happened over the last couple of decades, you not only have the decline that has been embedded in the cigarette business, over in the smokeless business, you've seen that category and the cigar business actually grow, and there's some interplay. So this year, for instance, you saw the smokeless category approximately 5% growth rate versus the 3% decline in cigarettes. In other years, on the margins, those numbers have changed modestly.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you two questions. First, under the Affordable Health Care Act, it's my understanding insurance companies can raise premiums charged to smokers, and how should we think about that as we think about consumption or shipment volume over the next several years? And then second, sometimes you all will give us an update on Marlboro consumers that buy on promotion. Can I get that percentage, and has that number changed as 2012 progressed?
So let me take the first part of that. The question relates to the provision of the Affordable Health Care Act. You may have seen some press on this about that would permit insurers, particularly in some pools, to charge surcharges to smokers. You know, that has to be implemented through the states. It also is combined with a provision that requires certain wellness programs to be offered. It's actually quite a complex provision of the act as we begin to understand the act better. So we will be engaging with the states on that. I think it goes back to what we spoke about just a moment ago, which is we're concerned about laws that would discriminate against smokers in this way. And actually, if one were to think about it, it actually could create unintended consequences. It could cause patients not to be forthcoming with their health care providers about their behaviors and their health. And so I think that that's all to be worked out. I think it's way too early, Ann, to predict any effect or not on volume or consumption. Dave, you want to say a word about the Marlboro promotion question?
Yes, without getting into details from a competitive framework, when we look at the brand Marlboro last year versus the previous years, basically there was no change in how we thought about the brand from a promotional level. What we did do, as I spent some time in my speech, was really we wanted to set the foundation for the new architecture in the brand families red, gold, green, and black. But basically no change in our overall strategy from how we go about and compete in the marketplace.
Sir, we have a question here.
Yes, thank you very much. Once you have some more visibility with regard to the issues that are being reviewed by the FDA, and assuming they would not go the same route as the proposed European directive, i.e. Restrictions with regard to displays on packaging, a ban on menthol and slims, could you envision a scenario, and also assuming that the remaining lights cases would be satisfactorily resolved in your favor, could you see a scenario where you would be willing to reconsider your current leverage targets, even if it would come at a lower credit rating, in order to give you more flexibility again to enhance shareholder value?
Okay, well, there's a lot in that question. Let me see if I can just unpack it in pieces, and Howard, maybe I'll ask you to comment on the balance sheet component of it. You know, it's true that developments in the EU, like the directive, can have some, headline effect, but it's worth reminding investors, particularly take plain packaging for a second, that the legal situation in the United States is quite different than take Australia or New Zealand or the EU because of the First Amendment. So you're probably familiar with the litigation over graphics warnings, and you see that being played out, right, which is a different kind of a proposal, but even that is having trouble passing First Amendment muster. You know, there was some headline news around the EU's proposal on menthol. As you know, in the EU markets, there aren't that many big menthol markets, and that's really firmly in the hands of the FDA. which I think is taking the appropriate amount of time to think about that, because that's a serious question. It's a third of the market, so there would be serious unintended consequences. And from our point of view, menthol is no more or less hazardous than regular cigarettes in any event. Howard, do you want to take the balance sheet part of that?
Sure. I think with regard to the balance sheet, I think we continue to believe that that having a strong balance sheet is an important part of our strategy, and I think we're pretty comfortable with our current leverage ratios. Now, of course, as you know, as conditions change, you know, if the litigation environment improves further, or as we grow our income, we can certainly reevaluate that. But I think right now we're pretty comfortable with our current balance sheet strategy.
I think we should cut off the Q&A there and continue
okay.
in the breakout room. So thank you again to Altria, and thanks for sponsoring
for
the break this morning.